Do you want to do this? You could do it next week. The children's sermon? No, okay, laughing, okay. It's worth a shot. So today's gospel has more than one memorable verse in it. More than one piece of this passage has been quoted and repeated and woven into our cultural understanding of Jesus and Christianity in the church. The phrases are a part of the way that we define ourselves at times, and they most certainly have had an impact on the way that our culture views us as Christians. And curiously, the two phrases that I picked out are also the titles of American rock songs. When I Googled these phrases, I came up with, The Greg Allman Band and, I forget what the other one was, equally hard rock sounding, but quoting phrases from Jesus, strangely enough. The first phrase is Jesus' tough words to Peter, and whether it was said in anger or exhaustion or frustration, it must have been hard to hear Jesus say to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." Peter had scolded Jesus for suggesting that rather than being a triumphant Messiah king, Jesus would suffer and die on the cross, and for telling Jesus off, for taking him aside and saying, "Jesus, this isn't the way we're going to do things," Peter gets it right back and then some. And people use that phrase all the time when someone tempts them to try a fattening dessert or to buy some pricey thing that they know really isn't in their budget, and they'll say, "Oh, get behind me, Satan." It's the title to a White Stripes song. I don't know why, but it's also an old Ella Fitzgerald tune. Do you remember Ella Fitzgerald? The song says, "Get thee behind me, Satan, I mustn't be kissed. But the moon is low and I may let go. Get thee behind me." I don't think she's on the same track as Peter. Ella's words are a response to temptation, but Jesus' words aren't about being tempted, but are a way of marking the distance between God's view of what needs to happen and what a human being like Peter might come up with. It's Jesus' way of telling Peter that in no uncertain terms that he was wrong about what it meant to say that Jesus was the Messiah. Peter says the right words, but he doesn't understand what they mean. He would have Jesus be king. But Jesus is going to be a king, but it isn't going to be in any way, shape, or form what Peter and the others might have imagined it to be like. Jesus pulls Peter up short so that he can clearly understand what it is to be a disciple. Being a disciple doesn't mean that you're going to ride in on a mighty charger with a crown and all that wardrobe. Instead, it's going to mean suffering and death on the cross. The only one who is tempted in this story is Peter. He's the one who is tempted to see things other than the way they should be seen. The second phrase comes when Jesus is explaining discipleship. And he calls Peter and the others to know that following him means that they will have to take up their cross. They will have to bear their own cross just as he would carry his. As I said, the Allman Brothers recorded a song called "My Cross to Bear," but I don't think it's really what Jesus was talking about at all, because it doesn't have anything to do really with bearing your cross. But if you search out the phrase "cross to bear," you'll come up with stuff like this. A cross to bear is a difficult responsibility or burden that someone must handle on their own. For example, when Nancy's husband passed away, she was left with quite a cross to bear, having to raise 4 children on her own. The second example said that if you have a cross to bear, you have a responsibility or a difficult situation that you must tolerate. Success has brought astonishing levels of media attention, and that is a cross that the young player has to bear. It's a burden or a trial one must put up with, as in Alzheimer's is a cross to bear for the whole family, or in a lighter tone, mowing that huge lawn once a week is Brad's cross to bear. I always feel like you ought to say it like Scarlett O'Hara. You know, just, "That is my cross to bear." I mean, she's just so dramatic. But that's not what Jesus is telling us. People use that phrase all the time, sometimes kiddingly and sometimes quite seriously, but there is something about cross-bearing that is frequently forgotten. Jesus isn't talking about something that we have no control over. It isn't something that we tolerate. It isn't a chore or a burden that has been foisted upon us. It isn't a consequence of some kind of trouble. Jesus said that following him meant that we need to take up our cross, and we pick up the cross. We don't catch it on the fly. It doesn't just randomly fall on our shoulders. It isn't a surprise or an accident. Cross-bearing is a decision. It's a choice that we make. Every time we choose to do something for God or for one of God's children, that's cross-bearing. It's not, I was trying to think of something in my life where people would say, oh, that's your cross to bear. And people said it when my husband was sick with cancer. That wasn't my cross to bear. That was a difficult illness. To say that something that just kind of happens to you out of no control of your own is a cross to bear, it doesn't make sense. David Loess wrote, we have been trained somewhere to think that when Jesus talks about taking up the cross, he's referring to some major spiritual travail, or at least significant suffering or sacrifice, preferably on behalf of the faith. But what if it's simpler than that, he says? What if it's more ordinary? And then he offers up a quote from Alan Culpepper, who says, the language of cross-bearing has been corrupted by overuse. Bearing a cross has nothing to do with chronic illness, painful physical conditions, or trying family relationships. It is instead what we do voluntarily as a consequence of our commitment to Jesus Christ. Let me read that list. It is what we do voluntarily as a consequence of our commitment to Jesus Christ. And if that's true, and I think that it is, then we are invited to take up our cross, and in doing so, our lives are shaped by that cross that we are carrying. And it can happen any time, any place, and almost doing anything that we take up our cross. When you give your time, your energy, or your talents to God, when you give of the money that you earn from the things that you have, all of those things, you are bearing your cross. Those are decisions that you are making. And what you let your life be shaped by your faith and your commitment to Christ, that's bearing your cross. This week was a week of committee meetings, and we had a budget committee meeting, and Paul Gruver said, well, she hasn't talked about money yet. We're coming into that season. We're going to talk about money. Even the choices that we make about what we do with our money and what we do in the offering is a part of our bearing God's cross. Because you could take that same money and do something just for you, something fun, something interesting. Go out for lunch, travel someplace fabulous, buy some new knick-knack or electronic thingamajig. But instead, we choose to give of our time and our talents and our treasure. There are all kinds of things that we might do every day at home or at work or at school that matter to God and that make a difference to the world. It's in the kindnesses that you share, not randomly, but intentionally. Cross-bearing is not random acts of kindness. It is intentional choosing to do things that make a difference. It's in the words that you choose and in the ones that you leave behind, because James is right. The tongue is a dangerous tool, and too often we are reckless with the words that we use. We set fires that can be so hard to put out. Cross-bearing is in the way that you respond to the challenges of life. Now, maybe that sounds too easy or too gentle, because after all, Jesus goes on to say that we are to lose our lives for his sake and the sake of the gospel. And so we need to remember that taking up our cross does come with some consequences. It isn't without anything that we do these things. It isn't consequenceless. There's risk. Cross-bearing means being willing to be faithful even if it gets difficult. It means putting Jesus' priorities and purposes ahead of our own comfort and our own security. It means being willing to give up ourselves so that others might experience God's love and care and protection. And that can be hard to do. Our instinct is to protect what is ours and to look out for ourselves. That's something that's just built into our DNA. It's something that people do. If left to our own, we would pick the things that we like the best. We would eat only dessert for breakfast, no beans, no vegetables. But we are called to be different. Our unwillingness sometimes to be the cross-bearing folks puts us in the same boat, though, as the disciples. They tried to save their lives. James and John went to Jesus and said, "Jesus, when you come into your kingdom, could we sit right next to you? Could we have seats of preference?" They were so confused about what it meant to be a follower. And Peter, who gets the answer right a lot of the times, not only runs away from Jesus, he lies about even knowing him. We might wish that things had happened differently, that Jesus had followed a more dignified, traditional understanding of what it was to be the Messiah, and that his disciples had been more heroic, but that is not the story we have before us. What we have before us is the story about a Messiah who was tortured and killed by the powerful and abandoned by his closest friends. And yet Mark keeps telling us again and again that this is the good news of Jesus Christ. He says that right at the beginning. This is the good news. And Jesus keeps trying to hush it up, but we keep reading and we know that Mark said this is good news. And I think, any of you ever read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? It says that this book that tells you how to get through the universe on the front, it says, "Don't panic." Sometimes I think the gospel should say that on the front. Don't panic. It's going to be okay. Because at the end of the story, the king who suffered and died on the cross is raised again. When we look at the whole story, we know that he was faithful to us all the way to the cross and even beyond, that he didn't abandon his friends, regardless of what they did for him. We know that at the end of the story, God is faithful and goes beyond just raising Jesus to new life. We know that we have been promised life, and we know that God's power is far stronger than anything the world could do to us. Because of this, we know that there is no sin or failure that is so great that it can separate us from the love of God. Nothing that we might do wrong, no chance that we might somehow forget to be the people we're called to be and God would leave us behind. God says, "I will be with you always. You are mine. Do not be afraid. Don't panic." Jesus gives us hope for the future. But in this text, we are called to follow him, not just for the future, but we are called to follow him in this life. I had a conversation recently with someone, and we were talking about death and whether or not, you know, was he afraid of dying? I said, "Are you afraid of dying or are you afraid of being dead?" And it was the being dead part, because we don't know what's going to happen. And I said, "Well, you know, you can look at it one of two ways." And I really think that end stuff has all been taken care of in baptism, that God has said, "You will be with me," and that's it. And so I do all of these things as a part of being a Christian because it's what I get to do. Because I don't have to do it to earn a reward. But if I get to the end and I die, and I find out that I was totally wrong, that I have spent the last 30 years of my life wandering around preaching and teaching people and telling people about the gospel, if I find out that all that stuff my parents told me wasn't true and that Sunday school was off somewhere crazy, I'm fine with that. This is the way I want to live my life. One pastor said, "We follow Jesus not just to be saved or to go to heaven. We follow Jesus because it's worth it." We take up our cross and we follow Jesus and we make choices every day because it's worth it. Because the people that we encounter are worth it. Because God has called us to do this thing, this work, to give of all that we have in any way that we can. Because we know that God would have us to do just that. Sometimes we're going to make terrible mistakes. Sometimes we're going to do things that we wish we hadn't done. But God is loving and forgiving, and God calls us anew every day. Take up your cross, make your decisions, big and small, and follow me. It will make a difference in your life. God bless you.